Himalaya.
Hi, everybody. It's Kel from The Professor Is In, and I wanted to just give you a quick announcement that we will be switching podcast platforms here very soon, which means a couple of things for you. One, nothing, because you'll still be able to get it where you've always gotten it, even if you're on the Himalaya app. And two, if you are a Himalaya Premier member.
Premium.
I always do that wrong.
That's fine. Let's just run with it.
Premium member. That will be ending and you will be notified, so you will not be charged. And so that's going to happen here very soon. Probably in the next podcast, we can be a little bit clearer about that. But I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. Interesting thing is, Himalaya is a startup and they are switching direction into what they are calling audio learning. And they're taking different ideas, different things that people want to learn, and they're delivering it in bite-sized chunks, 5 to 15 minutes. So we're actually going to be doing some of those things with them. And we're going to take some of our long-time practical projects, right? The cover letter, the CV, how to do it.
Transitioning out of the academy.
Right. All those
or
things.
Or productivity.
Mm. We're going to figure out how to do that with them. So we'll keep you posted on that as well. We're pretty excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
So those of you who are super into the auditory experience and like to go on walks and listen to things and maybe learn stuff, I think it's going to be really cool. So we're looking forward to that. We'll still keep doing the podcast. Might be a little bit of bump as we find an editor and figure out how to do that sort of stuff. But
I'd like to continue to have a premium membership community option.
Right.
And so we'll have to figure that out as well, to do that.
A subscription service that gets a little bit more access that's really affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the premium membership with Himalaya is $4.99 a month. Mm-hmm.
And we appreciate our subscribers. Thank you. We do indeed.
And we love the conversations with them.
So like just last week, I did an AMA for subscribers on our social media platform for the community about anything they wanted to ask about the job market or transitioning out of the academy.
So we'll keep figuring that out, but just wanted to give you an early heads up.
Mm-hmm. So I'm Karen Kelski of The Professor Is In, and as always, we are delighted that you're here with us today. And we are recording the day after the Breonna Taylor
verdict was
announced, and also the day after Trump came out and said there will be no transfer of power. And
he said he wouldn't, to be clear, he wouldn't agree to it.
He said there are a couple of lines, different places where he said it. But in any case, the upshot being that it seems more and more clear that there's no commitment to peaceful transfer of power, which is, if there is a foundation to a democratic system, I'd say that's probably one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot. And Kel and I talked about what to talk about today, and decided that,
doing a whole podcast of just a primal scream might be pretty hard for you. Because I do want to add in there that the other thing that happened is that we lost Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
That's right. We haven't recorded since that happened, of course.
On the era of Rosh Hashanah. And so it's been a pretty... We've had some really hard bumps.
Body blows.
Right. And so just to give you a little insight, what happens is that, I want a plan. And Karen always says, we just need to pick a topic. And we do really well if we just talk about the topic. And I get all anxious and then say, well, you have to do something. And we decided that we would just sit down and try to talk our way through this. The basic question, the basic message of this podcast will be, as we wander around like we do, is it's okay to not be okay. Mm-hmm. That's basically it.
And it's okay to not be productive.
Right.
That too. I mean, just to be crystal clear to our listeners who live in a cult of productivity, that it is okay. If you can't get stuff done, that is totally reasonable.
It's a normal human response.
And I especially... If you are Black today, obviously you're not listening to this today, but the systematic devaluing of Black life, the virulent anti-Blackness of our entire American enterprise from the foundation to the present moment. It's just something that I don't need to tell you about it, but I just want to remind you, because I think it's important that it's there are times when you just can't be part of, you know, this, like, I'm going to, you know, apply for this grant or write this article or.
Yeah. And I hear you on that. And as I'm talking, and of course, you can see me just getting more and more irritated and shaking my head.
Which is not super motivating to keep recording, I must say.
No, I'm not shaking my head at you and what you're saying. I apologize. What I'm sitting here, like, my whole body is sort of vibrating with, you know what? Yeah, absolutely. With the most kindness to Black academics in that you don't need to be okay. The part I'm getting mad about, it's not about you, is like, white people, you shouldn't fucking be okay. Mm. Like, you shouldn't be okay. And if you're okay, I was talking to...
Then what's wrong with you?
It's what's wrong with you. And I think about that, not you, like, what's wrong with us? And I was talking yesterday to our rabbi about that. I was talking about, like, I feel like there's something seriously wrong with us, that we are sitting down at our damn dining room tables having dinner and not storming these ICE things and dragging these kids out of the cages, like overwhelming the, and screw the seats of power. You know, at first I thought, well, we should be at the Supreme Court blocking this whole, or the Senate, the Capitol building. It's like, okay, whatever. We have to get, like, gritty. So that's why I wasn't shaking my head at what you were saying. I agree with it completely. I have just a roaring rage right now about the world. And I'm all about, in fact, right before we got on this call, Karen was talking about something that was making her mad. And I said, I just like to, could we just not put a bunch of negative energy out there? And, like, I get on and go, blah. So I was probably just trying to tell myself, but I guess what I'd really, you know, it's okay not to get work done. Like, I feel like,
So I have something else to say before you move on. I was in an exchange on Facebook, I think it was just yesterday, a couple days ago. And, someone I follow, I can't remember the specifics now. Well, in any case, it doesn't really matter. It was something about anti-Blackness and white people. And I wrote a comment. This is a pretty good friend who knows my sort of background of engaging with anti-racist stuff over many years. And I wrote a comment that said, Kel and I talk all the time about what is wrong in white people's hearts that we tolerate all of this. And someone wrote back to me who didn't know me. So in other words, another friend on the page, and said, oh, Karen, I urge you to educate yourself about racism and learn about how the country was founded on racism and genocide. And here's some good books you can read. And
that was very helpful.
It was. And I said, and she said, we all need to make sure that we understand the foundation, how racism is foundational to American history. At first, I had this little, you know, reaction of irritation, like, do you understand? But then I thought, you know, fair enough. She doesn't know me. And I said, I ended up responding, oh, but, you know, I've read a lot. I do know that. I know the intellectual story. But what Kel and I talk about is what's wrong with our hearts. And I don't think you can know the whole history of how we're a country founded on genocide and slavery, enslavement, and white supremacy. And it doesn't answer the question, what's wrong with our hearts? White people. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, this takes it in a little bit different direction. Or I guess I actually put us in this direction with my just rant about nobody should be okay right now. But yeah, I mean, you and I have talked about it. I've talked about it with several people. My sister and I talked about it extensively. And I think the conversation started, just to give credit, I think my initial engagement with this was Sonia Renee Taylor, who wrote Body is Not an Apology. I'm pretty sure it was her who said, what's wrong with you? You know, it was one of these, like, young white person defending their friendship or relationship with a person of color, and the grandfather being a racist jerk, and everybody was all super excited about, wow, look at her stand up to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of following in what we're supposed to be doing, which is like, get your cousins, right? Except she was making the point, it's like, what's wrong with you people that you're having these conversations at all? Like, let's flip the script here,
mm-hmm.
and let's look at the rot that is allowing this to occur.
Sure.
So I have the opportunity to work with a lot of Black women scholars. And so I have the opportunity to see very up close and personal the stunning damage done by people not caring. It's not, I mean, yes, there's the damage done by racism. There's the damage done by all those things. But if you look at Breonna Taylor, if you went into work the day of that verdict, mm-hmm. or you talked to someone in the day of that verdict, or you interacted with people and you interacted, and I know people always say things like, did you reach out to your Black colleague about this or that? Why, if it's not just an all white group of people, that's where it should be like, I am heartbroken by this decision.
Mm-hmm.
Not because, oh, I want you to know that you might be having a hard day today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about then we take up the space and make it all about
right.
us.
Or virtue signaling, right. which is what we get accused of by right. the right wing.
There's also this really dangerous because white supremacy is so insidious.
Mm-hmm.
So easy to center whiteness over and over and over again that it's always you have to do like little, you know, the pH test you have to do in a hot tub. Like you constantly have to dip in a little thing and go, where am I? Where yeah. am I? Where how, am I? Where am I? Right.
How is this participating in white supremacy?
Right. So, but you know, I talked to people yesterday and today about just how floored they are. And then I hear people talk about, I don't think the people in my department that I talked to yesterday were affected at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets turned onto, and I can't function and they can. It's like, I want to tell people, I want to tell Black scholars, you don't have to function.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to tell white scholars is you shouldn't be functioning.
Yeah, why are you functioning?
Why are we?
Why like, are
I don't
we
want to, I don't want to change it to the
sure,
you because I'm separating it
yeah.
from myself because
no,
I I'm not, don't want to do that,
yeah,
but I do want to figure out how to say it's not just for, you know, you to, I can't quite articulate it, but really, I saw someone call for a general strike yesterday and I thought, you know, at what point, and we put this as a question on our
dispatches
yeah, just why recently.
The fuck why don't we revolt?
Why don't we revolt?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just want to challenge people, like, if you're struggling to work right now, why are you struggling to work right now?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
or if, well, I thought your question was going to be, if you're not struggling to work right now, why are you not struggling?
Right, mm-hmm. right. To be honest, I think we should be all be a significant mess right
yeah.
now.
I want to give a shout out to those of you who are listening who have, I don't want to derail this thread at all, but I also want to point out that even if we just simply went to COVID and the pandemic and the fact that kids can't go to school and that everybody's working from home, that there's this other layer, that there's another layer as well of the who's getting work done, who's not.
Right.
There's a gender breakdown of labor, division of labor issue going on that is separate from what we've just been talking about and has also been having an impact for, what is it, 6 months now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can work, why can you work? If you're getting stuff done, why are you getting stuff done?
Right. And
it's a pretty broad question right now on many, many levels. I think climate scientists might ask some of us that as well. But that, and again, and I'm not trying to derail, that was like a little interjection without at all wanting to derail our focus today on racism and anti-Blackness.
Well, and to be fair, that is not what we sat down to talk about. What we sat down to talk about, and you're bringing it back to that, and I think this was just a sort of an entry into it,
mm-hmm.
is why it's okay if you're not being productive,
mm-hmm.
and how do we answer the challenge that we have to be productive?
And my question that just popped into my head is, who are you serving by being productive?
Mm.
Who are you serving? What are you serving?
Okay.
And that's not a complicated, that's not a yes or no, black or white question, because many things can be true at once. But I really want to ask you to problematize the ways that you're serving a kind of rotten academic infrastructure through your productivity. And I know that it's still a job that many people want to have and are invested in having it is better than, you know, some other options that might be immediately available to you. So it's not like a burn it all down discourse. But if you look it directly in the face, I just want to ask you to ask yourself, for yourself, what are you serving and who are you serving when you impose this regime of productivity on yourself?
And the thing that gets me up in the morning and the things that gets me on Zoom talking to clients and writing columns and doing podcasts and trying to figure this all out is that some part of me hopes that people in the academy who love their jobs, I mean, they love why they got there, they love all those things, and what they don't love is what has happened or the structure, that this can be the opportunity as to have a radical reimagining of the university. So I'm not one of the people who says, you know, everybody off the ship right now. What I do hope is that if people are going to stay on the ship, I think that there's people that economically is a good idea to pivot really quickly and find a side hustle. And we've talked about that and making sure that you have economic flexibility because this is going to be an extinction event. Mm-hmm. At the same time, that those people who are not in threat of extinction events or who losing their salaries or losing their jobs at this exact moment, rather than churning away trying to get the next article out or churning away trying to get your book finished, by the old standard, if you are in a position to reimagine a new standard and to adjust differently to make the university that we keep saying it is or talking about, I mean, I have a hope for that.
Mm-hmm.
I really, just like I have a hope that we will radically reimagine what the U.S. has always said it wanted to be. I mean, I know, I sound a little Obama hope-ish, but otherwise, why are we doing what we're doing?
Mm-hmm.
So
I think it's just you and I have always had different, you know, we come at things from different directions and engage in different ways. Yes. And I think, you know, that it's always critical to open your eyes to the truth of the matter. And the truth of the matter that my eyes have been open to, I mean, there's been several of them about the American experiment, is that a very large portion of white Americans never only wanted democracy when it was guaranteed that white people would retain control, unchallenged control. Mm-hmm. And the minute that looked like it might be under threat, which frankly, I don't even know how much threat it's actually under, but sure, it looks like it's under some threat more than before because of demographic changes and so on, immigration and various things. Then it was like, never mind, we didn't want democracy after all. Autocracy, authoritarianism, fascism is just fine with us if it means that white people stay in control. So, you know, that has been a lesson for me of the last 3.5 years. And I think, and that is a parallel in some ways to my understandings of what I've been trying to tell people about the university system, that there are many, many people with very, very fond delusions about, well, the university is supposed to be, academia is supposed to be better, but academia is supposed to be more moral. Well, academia is supposed to be more liberal or progressive, and it shouldn't matter what I wear into my interview. And it shouldn't matter how I talk if my ideas are great. And it shouldn't matter how I write my cover letter if my dissertation was, you know, good. And it shouldn't matter how many publications I have if my intellectual project is important. And in the same way, it's just really important to say, yeah, I get what should and shouldn't be true. And that's gaslighting. That's denial on the one hand and gaslighting on the other to believe that. And it's really important to look at that. So I see a parallel there.
And, you know, my slight translation of that would be to say, you're absolutely right. It absolutely should not matter. And the reality is that right now it does.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we go back to Audre Lorde and say, you can't dismantle the master's house with the master's tools, and say, where I would have said, you're right. So get in there and change it. You're right. Go in there and be on a search committee and say, you know, we're going to change all these rules. And we know people who've tried to do it. And we know people who've been mildly successful. And we know people who've been beaten down. But again, I want to keep coming back to, because I had somebody on the private network for Unstuck say in response to a webinar that I did, it's that this is, it was actually in the webinar in the question section or comment section. It said, someone said, yeah, the university abandoned us. Mm. And I said, the university never had you.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Right? So much so, yes.
But what when I say that mm-hmm. to you all, mm-hmm. I am not saying it with bitterness.
Right.
Not saying it with
right.
you fools.
Yeah, right.
I'm saying that this is, and it goes back to our very first episode, right? The Academy is a cult. Mm-hmm. And goes back to being taught very, very, very carefully taught that this is the ivory tower. This is a group of scholars. This is this place of shared experience. And then when people tell you, no, it's not, people saying, yes, it is. Look. And what that does, that's where I think that gaslighting comes in that you're talking about, right? So there are people who are saying, no, it isn't. It doesn't welcome me. It doesn't accept my whole humanity. It doesn't treat me like a full human being. And
it does reward bad behavior, and it does reward bullying, and it does reward cisgender white men, and it does squelch dissent. And so, I mean, all those things.
So I'm trying to, you know, in all the work I do, what I'm trying to do is say, don't individualize this to the people who are typically pushed to the margins, who mm-hmm. are shoved to the edge. Don't individualize this. It's a system. Mm-hmm. And those of you who are not being pushed to the edge, quit saying it's not doing it.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and quit ignoring your position in the system.
Right. But I don't hold some, like, I don't feel like there's a cabal of mm-hmm. universities all meeting.
Right.
There's no academy except the people who are in the freaking academy.
Right. Right.
So it only operates when you agree to operate that
right,
way.
Right. And that's something I've been giving a lot of thought about this week. I have been since the minute we started the Professor's Inn in 2011. But it's, so this is, I'm going to try and step very, very carefully here with full understanding of the fraughtness of what I'm about to say. But there is a certain kind of victim narrative that many academics are fond of, and especially when you end up in these very exploitative scenarios, like being a certain kinds of grad students, certain kinds of postdocs, and definitely adjuncts, and it's like I'm a victim of this system, and you are a victim of this system. It is true, you are, and there is no way that I want to ever fall into the category of victim blaming the victim. But I also want to say that when you accept the subject position of victim as your identity, and the, what you said that made me think of this is the academy abandoned us. Mm-hmm. And there is a victim stance in that. And I want to problematize that, because I want there to be, I want people, our listeners and our readers and everybody who engages with us, to engage with the idea that, yes, there is a large, massive structure that is totally exploitative and racist and sexist and all these other things that we're constantly talking about. And at the same time, you can't plant your flag of identity in the fact that you're being abused by it, because that will harm nobody but yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Am I making my case effectively?
No, I think that you are. I think if we could maybe back it up a little bit to take away the inflammatory words, because I think victim is a tough word. Mm-hmm. Right? It's hard to think of yourself as one. It's hard to it's just a tough word. Mm-hmm. So you know me, I'm going to always come back to, like, what's the driving thing here? What is the thing that's been activated in your life to make you chase something, right? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that happens for us when we start to get in this conversation is that a lot of people came into the PhD in search of a higher, better, mm-hmm. This thing. And yes. Part of it is an escape from capitalism in mm-hmm. their minds. Part of it is a life of the mind outside of this muck. Mm-hmm. Part of it is just a deep love of learning and teaching. Mm-hmm. So there's some really deep
love of curiosity right. and being in the dusty stacks of the library or in the lab watching the weird thing happen in the petri dish.
And we talk about all the time about academics have this special quality about them.
Yeah.
And so.
Which we love.
Right.
And share.
Right. And I think that we get really attached to those because it's activated by something, right? We're making that path because some part of us, some part of our upbringing, some part of our something says, this is it. Mm-hmm. Right. And you keep trying to get to that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in there, forget that there's no escape from capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
The university is not going to do it for you. And that thing that you went into because it was this group of scholars and you had your graduate cohort, and there is that sort of wildly insular and intimate experience for so many people.
Mm-hmm. Not everybody.
Who fit in very particular categories. Mm-hmm. But even the people who are pushed to the outside of it still have that. So many of them I talk to are longing to try to figure out how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally often leave because they can't ever get that. Right?
Yeah.
So to me, if I switch the words around and say, what is the longing that is keeping you in relationship with someone who repeatedly fails you?
That's a very good question.
Right?
And maybe you said someone, but I think maybe it's something, or it's both.
Well, I think we personalize.
Because sometimes it's that one, it's your advisor.
Right.
Sometimes it's your department head. But sometimes it's the quote unquote, the academy. And what I mean by that is the person who just keeps applying for adjunct job after adjunct job after adjunct job, believing, this time it's going to be different. This time they're going to respect me. This time they're going to reward the labor that I'm giving to the department. They're going to see my value and they're going to give me the job I want. And it keeps not happening. And so then that's where I would say it's not an individual. It's not a someone, it's a something.
Well, and I also think I wonder who the they is. And when I work with clients and they say, everyone will think, I use Martha Beck's thing of saying, so name everyone for me.
It's usually like two people.
It's like your advisor and your fifth grade teacher and your right. aunt who said you were never going to amount to anything. It's like, okay, so that's three people, not everyone. So let's change our language a little right. bit. But I just think that, I guess the thing that, you know, you and I go back and forth and I always push back on this. I don't push back on the idea that I think adjuncts should quit
mm-hmm.
unless they are adjuncting because they are they can afford it and they enjoy what they do and blah blah blah. Great. Adjuncts trying to belong. I just want to say please stop. Mm-hmm. You and I have a disagreement about the language because mm-hmm. I feel like it intentionally or not. Sounds like it's blaming people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
but that's what I feel like happens in sure. people's hearing.
Yeah, I hear that. And I mean, I think that, you know, there's always the issue that in the end, I want individuals to ask yourself, why are you doing this?
Right.
And I mean, especially because there's now 20 years of evidence,
right?
20 years of blogging and data and statistics and tragic tales that all universally and uniformly tell a single consistent narrative, which is adjuncts are exploited. The department does not hire you. They do not respect you or reward you appropriately. So, yeah, I have a little bit of impatience. It's
right.
true. And I'm not going to deny that because that would be gaslighting.
No, it
so
is.
I
you
think
sound impatient.
I want to just admit that that is where, and as you said, we have we come at it in different ways. And
right.
so I know why some people get super angry at me for right. this, but I am going to just own what I say, which is, you know, the evidence,
right.
you know, we're scholars. We have good brains. We know how to do research. We know how to look up data and interpret it. And the evidence is all there that mm-hmm. adjuncting is mm-hmm. a dead end mm-hmm. for everyone except those for whom, you know, they have a whole other side, they have a whole other main career and they adjunct because they love to share that thing with the young minds and they
well,
don't need the money.
There's always that one story, right? I mean, it's the classic bootstrap bullshit capitalism thing. There's always that one,
that one story.
I've been adjuncting
for
10
years.
Seven
and then
years,
I got a tenure track job. Yeah.
At the great R1.
Right.
And it all worked. And it's like,
yeah.
Okay, folks, can we just not use the one example right. to discount the state of the system?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's probably where we disagree and or where we, you know, you and I have a conflict about mm-hmm. it. I also, for me, as a coach who works with people like face to face all the time, mm-hmm. for my own mental health, mm-hmm. it became really important to me when I started doing it, like after the first few months, to say, I need to detach from what you do with this information.
Yeah,
because if
sure.
I don't,
yeah,
I cannot move across the line to make you act.
Right.
So I work really hard at actually keeping this like wall of here's the information. And if you continue to follow your path, blessings on your journey.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you and I have a little bit of a different service that you're a little bit more, I mean, I hate to use this word because it'll probably set you off in a big way, but you're a little bit more missionary evangelical.
Oh my
like,
heavens, what is this? That's like the worst insult that you can apply to me. But in
right.
any case,
it's like, I want you to change your behavior.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, whatever.
But I mean, I just want to say in all fairness that 10 years ago, I was more like that.
Yeah.
And now I've done a lot of work. I've been doing this a long time. I've done a lot of personal growth work and I know I can't control others. And indeed, everyone's on their own journey. All I can do is just keep shouting the unpleasant truth mm-hmm. in as many ways as I can. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do.
Yeah. And I think that, again, we're not even doing the topic that we started with, like how to be okay.
Well,
in a way we are, but
I feel like we are, which is don't expect to be okay right now. Well, it's not, we've now gone to like a sort of a 30-year time frame as opposed to this week. But yeah, like it's okay that you're not getting your work done.
But let me just personalize it for just a second about like, it's okay that you're not productive. It's okay that you're not this. I've spent so many sleepless nights or staring at my computer or morning pages writing everything like, what is my purpose in this moment with the people I work with? Mm-hmm. Like, what do I tell them? If I sit in front of a group of people and they say, I can't figure out how to work, my kids are home, I'm not going to get tenure because I'm not getting this work done. I mean, I can offer like, you don't know. And let's start resetting expectations. Let me give you language to start saying to your department. Let's work on things to say when somebody comes to you with one more thing and you can say, okay, I can do that. But what would you like me to take off my plate to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Like start to reclaim the agency mm-hmm. of resetting expectations. And then we may be able to push the expectations backward mm-hmm. in a way that maybe might protect women as we come out of this mm-hmm. thing. Because we know women's productivity is plummeting. We know submissions to journals. We know all those things. So I guess what I'm trying to say is we're struggling right along with you mm-hmm. to say, what's the best encouragement we can give? What's the best advice we can give? And I know for you, Karen, that your advice in some ways becomes more bracing the more you see the threat. You become more, there's more of a like, listen, I'm trying to tell you, mm-hmm. listen. And, you know, it's balanced on the other side with me, you know, saying, I hear you, I hear you, I hear you. And I'm not saying that you don't hear people. You do, you hear it all the time. And then you say, I want you to hear what I'm hearing. And so trying to find that. I mean, this is just, I guess the upshot of this entire podcast is this is a really hard time. And it's okay if you're wandering around in the dark, confused about what you're doing. You know, this is a weird aside. I just have to do a weird aside.
Okay.
I was just doing wandering around in the dark. And uh-huh. I was thinking about that's actually ableist language because they're, if you can't see. Anyway, mm-hmm. I have to figure out a different way to say that. But if you're wandering around unable to discern where you are,
mm-hmm.
if it all feels like a landscape you don't recognize,
mm-hmm.
it is.
Yes. And that actually reminds me, and I'm going to sound like such a dork, and because I'm actually not a person. I have read the Lord of the Rings series. I liked it pretty well back in the day in college or high school when I first read it. And I've seen the movies and I like them well enough. But I'm not all that. It's not a thing for me. But I ended up somewhere on Facebook, somewhere on social media, saw someone with a bunch of screen caps from one of the movies. And it was sort of like, and I'm going to totally screw up the quote, but it was like, "And we didn't ask to be born in these times, Frodo." "And yet we have been, and all we can do is," you know, the wizard and whatever. And
everybody, I'm sorry,
A, that I brought this up, and B, that I am like mangling it all so badly. But the point is that I did it. I think that these are historic times where we have to dig deep into our spiritual truths. Why are we here?
Right.
What is our purpose?
Right.
We can't just float like we could have before all this stuff happened, where it was like, well, it was all kind of yucky and bad. But as long as, you know, and when I say we, I'm in particular referring to privileged white people, that we could just go through our grad school, go through more or less, get a job, go through more or less, have some level of financial security and kind of take it for granted, this and that, some political battles, but whatever. And now I think I'm bringing up the Lord of the Rings because it feels like this really intense dig deep moment. And I watched myself looking at it saying, "Good God, Karen, I cannot believe that this like hokey, you know, quasi spiritual screen cap from Lord of the Rings is speaking to you from The Hobbit or whatever is speaking to you." But it did. It was like, we have to hold up here and say, "Wow, what am I here for?" Which is like, just restating what you said, right, that you're having sleepless nights where you're like, "What am I here for?
What am I doing?" You know, in the span of your talking, mm-hmm, because my brain is so monkey-like right, mm-hmm, now, it's just bouncing from thought to thought to thought. So the first thing you thought is Lord of the Rings and what am I doing here? And that reminded me that we're recording this during the Days of Awe, which for Jews means between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And, mm-hmm, during that time, you're supposed to be reflecting on sort of, you know, where you've missed the mark and where you want to change before, you know, before the gates close. And that's what you're sealed to do. And so I have been, the 27th Psalm is a psalm that's read during that time, and it's read at our synagogue, and it's been at every service and blah, blah, blah. But the first line of is, "One thing I ask."
Mm-hmm.
"I ask of you, mm-hmm, this I earnestly seek," and then it's blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've been thinking about this entire week is I've been...
Okay, go ahead. Okay. So I had to...
Anyway. Okay. What I've been thinking about is the thing goes on to say that I may dwell in the house of God, but I've been thinking about, what is the one thing I want to focus on? What is the one thing I want to ask, that I want to look constantly to? What do I want to devote myself to this year? And I'm not talking about product, people. Step out of capitalism for a minute. I'm not talking about the book I'm going to write or the thing I'm going to do. I'm talking about, what do I want for my own internal well-being, right?
Yeah.
So every day I'm like, what do I want? I want more self-compassion. I want to learn how to be, you know, less judgmental about myself, so I'm less judgmental about other people. But really, I'd like, every day I'm exploring this question. And then you went on and you ended it with "hold up." You used the phrase "hold up."
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever hear "hold up" without hearing Beyonce's song, right? Yeah. "Hold up. You don't love you like they don't love you like I, or they don't love you like I love you."
Mm-hmm.
Was that "she don't love you like I love
they don't"?
They don't. And I have been using that, talking to clients recently about when you catch yourself and pay attention, like, hold up. And what I was saying to a client the other day is it's to your, imagine to selling Beyonce's lyrics to yourself.
They like, don't love you like
up.
I love you. Yeah.
They don't love you like I love you.
Mm-hmm.
Hold up.
Oh my goodness. I just got chills.
Right? So hold up. Like, stop.
Mm-hmm.
Quit looking there,
mm-hmm,
because it needs to be here. And, mm-hmm, now we've just gone off the rails in this conversation.
And how about come to the Professor's Inn podcast for Psalm 27 and Beyonce.
And the Lord of the Rings.
And the Lord of the Rings
where
in a 5-minute span.
Where are you going to get all that? Seriously. All right.
Maybe on that note, we should just wrap up.
We need to wrap up. But do come back for the pop culture references and the random Torah teaching. Look up the 27th Psalm. Ponder it. Listen to Beyonce. Ponder if that song was for yourself.
Ponder the Torah of Beyonce.
Yes. All right.
All right.
All right. We got to go. Goodbye.
Bye.